Hello everyone, welcome to the first episode of Teacher Talks the Podcast, a podcast series in which students chat with professors. Today, you will be listening to Maud Weijers and Andreu van Hooft. I will start by briefly introducing myself. My name is Maud, I am currently the chair of Study Association Babylon, and I am a fourth year student of IBC, and I have followed the Spanish track, so I've also had some classes from Andreu. So yeah, it's really nice talking to you today. Maybe you can introduce yourself as well.
Hola, buenos días, Maud. Good morning, Maud. I am Andreu van Hooft, indeed. And as my first family name indicates, Andreu is Catalan, and that means that my first language is Catalan. Spanish is my second first language. And van Hooft, that is the Dutch side of my identity, so I can also speak a little bit Dutch. I am a professor at the Department of Language and Communication, and this is my 31 year at this department. I enjoy a lot to share the hours and time with students in the classrooms and doing other kind of activities such master's thesis and bachelor's thesis. And indeed, it's for me a pleasure also to work with my colleagues doing research, for example, to the effects of language choice in advertisement, or studying the relation between language words and images. Mm-hmm. And well, this together with collaboration with colleagues from universities in Chile, Spain, France, Italy, Germany. So I am enjoying a lot my work as a researcher and professor here.
Yes. So 31 years, you said, that's a really long period already working
yes,
at Stanford University. So as you mentioned, your first name is Catalan or Spanish and your last name is Dutch. So how come? Are your parents like from Spain and from the Netherlands or?
Yes, this is the most logic explanation indeed. Mm-hmm. My father is a Dutchman and my mother was a Catalan woman. Mm-hmm. And they met each other in 1961. And in 1962, I was born in the Netherlands, in the southern city of Den Bosch.
Okay, so you were born in the Netherlands, but Catalan and Spanish are your first languages.
Yes, because in 1963, mm-hmm. we went to Barcelona.
Ah,
so
okay.
I grew up in Barcelona, a city that had and has two languages,
yes.
Catalan and mm-hmm. Spanish.
Yes.
And so I grew up in a Catalan-Spanish environment and context.
Okay, and then at what age did you come back to the Netherlands?
Well, when I was finished with my master's degree in Spanish literature, that was in 1985, the summer of 85, I decided to come back to the Netherlands.
Okay.
Because I was a Dutchman and... Mm-hmm. I had a PhD project and I thought, okay, that will be the good moment to go to Netherlands and
yes.
to use the time to write my PhD thesis.
And did you already speak Dutch when you came here?
Or not at all, you... not at all, not
no?
at all. No, no, that was a moment of discovering mm-hmm. The language that was my father's language. But indeed, we did not speak Dutch at home. Well,
yeah.
I had some words in my memory, such as melk, brood, yeah. mes, and a.
Mm-hmm.
But that was not enough to fully function, to have the possibility to fully function in the Dutch society. So I learned
no.
Dutch with two daughters of friends of mine. They
okay.
were at this time 14 and 13. They were very, very sharp teachers.
And was it difficult learning Dutch? Because they say that Dutch is one of the most difficult languages to learn.
Well, I think that each language has its difficulties. It is difficult to learn a language if you have passed the frontier of the 18 years.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But I enjoyed learning a new language as Dutch in this case. No, it was hard, but it was a nice adventure.
Yeah, that's nice. And was it a bit of a sort of like small culture shock when you came to the Netherlands, or were you already a bit used to the Dutch culture because your father was Dutch, or was it very indeed, different?
Indeed, the fact that I'm a result of a combination of southern and northern cultures, I had already a lot of knowledge about the Dutch society. So a lot of cousins and uncles and opas and omas, the grandpa and the grandma were Dutch. So I had all from my first years the possibility to share a lot of time with my Dutch family when we were here in visit time. So
yes.
Maybe the most great impact was my first day in Rotterdam when I went to do a walk in the center of the city at 6 hours, 6, 7. And in the Leimbaan, this is one of the main streets in the centrum of Rotterdam. And when I was walking there, I saw nobody at this moment there. And for me, it was a very strange thing because indeed in Spain, if you go out, there is a lot of people walking, sharing moments in the streets, the public places. And for me, was this a moment of not cultural shock, but a moment I recognize that some societies deal with time and with the outer spaces, with the common spaces, with the public spaces in other ways.
Yeah.
That was in 1987.
Yeah, and obviously the whole time schedule from the Netherlands is very different from the one in Spain as well. So I can imagine that took some getting used to as well for you.
Yeah, that was maybe the most important shift in my behavior.
Yeah.
And this is also the link from humans to animals. We are also animals, so eating is a very important activity we do each day, if we eat indeed. So the hours that are related with the eating moments maybe are the most difficult, or the hours that you need more time to adapt to this new timetable.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. So you've spent your childhood in Spain, and then when you were already a bit further in your studies, you came to the Netherlands. So what exact path did you take to become a professor in the language and communication studies?
Well, in 1987, the Department of Spanish, together with the Department of French, German, and English of the at our university, Rabat University, create a new program in business communication, and from different departments, some professors work together to design this program. So a lot of us were firstly professors at the departments of Spanish language and culture, French language and culture, English language and culture. And we went from these departments to this new department, a new program called business communication. So we started a new program in the faculty, and also I think at a Dutch and European level, in which we combine foreign languages, organizational courses, marketing, and this all from an empirical, quantitative, experimental perspective, including, of course, also qualitative research methods.
Yes, of course. So you were actually one of the people that constructed the program as it is right now?
Yeah.
And did it still change a lot since then, or is it like more or less the same?
Well, the main strokes, the main tracks of our program are very similar. However, in 31 years, a lot of things have changed.
Yes.
So, for example, when we start our program, our focus of study were the written texts in paper.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, we use screens as equivalent of what was a paper, and we use other mediums as Twitter or WhatsApp, Instagram. So there have been a lot of changes since 1987, but the languages and the relation between languages, messages, and persuade people to do things, to change behaviors, to buy something, this main idea is still relevant and present in the program of the year 2021 compared to the program of the year 1987.
I think I had a small Wi-Fi connection issue.
Okay.
But basically what you said is like the whole society has changed a lot over the past 31 years. So obviously the program of the studies has had to adapt accordingly.
Yeah.
Right? As the society changed.
Yes, some things have changed indeed.
Mm-hmm.
As the poet says, things, they are changing, but there are also core issues that are similar. So at the moment that we are studying how people persuade each other to change behaviors, for example,
mm-hmm.
Or language choices in professional communication, or the style choices that people do in medical context to help each other or to convince a given group to, for example, vaccinate themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The questions are the same, but the techniques and the media we are studying now, this is change.
Yes, yeah, of course.
So, I would like to give an example in a more large span of time.
Yes, please, go ahead.
Yeah, 1 century before Christus,
yes,
we had an author. We think that he or she is the author, Longinus. However, other academics say that this is not the name of the author. So we still don't know 100% certain if this is the author, but this author, this is the first written source in which a person, a human, asks a simple question: what should the text have to persuade someone? And most important, what should have a text to create a kind of emotion in the receiver?
Mm-hmm.
And this is a question that is still relevant for our modern societies. So how can we persuade somebody to do something? And how can we get a kind of emotion in our receivers?
Yes, I think that's been a very important question indeed. Like already in the ancient Greeks with their rhetorics and everything.
Yeah, so in this perspective, things do not change.
No.
And that is also good because these are relevant things.
And yeah, like the very relevant topics in life, so to say, will always more or less stay the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, nice. So within your whole path of studies and career, you've already conducted and contributed to a lot of researches, a lot of them focusing on languages obviously, and bilingualism. So do you think that your not bilingual upbringing, because you weren't really raised bilingual, but the fact that you were raised speaking Spanish and then at a later stage started speaking Dutch more often, did this influence the way you perceive certain topics within your working field?
I think so. I had a very good friend of mine, a Catalan researcher, Jordi Jové. He was also a poet. And he said to me, Andreu, when we do research, we are researching ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
This was a very strong statement. But indeed, there are personal characteristics of oneself that can influence the way you see things. And well, the fact that I am a multilingual, multicultural entity, human being, probably has influenced my interest in these issues, such as language choice in advertisements and the effects of this language choice, or the use of foreign languages in professional contexts. Yeah. So yes, indeed, to some extent, I think my multilingual brain probably influences my interest in multilingualism and how does it work in persuasive communication. Yes, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really nice sentence saying that when you do research, you basically, yeah, research yourself. I think that's a nice thing to keep in mind.
Yeah.
And do you also think that your interest would have been really different if, yeah, your upbringing or your like brain, so to say, wouldn't have been multilingual?
Can you repeat the question, please? Because there is some noise between your microphone and my speaker.
I will repeat the question then.
Thank
so
you.
If you if your brain, so to say, wouldn't be multilingual, if you wouldn't speak several languages, do you think that your interest with regard to the working field would really have been different? Or do you think that languages is just something that appeals to you no matter how many languages you speak? So in the end, you would always have ended up in the thing you're doing right now?
I don't know. I can imagine that there is another more strong power that make us, all of us, active independently of the area of interest or activity, and this is curiosity. So as a little child, I was very curious, but I am not the only person that has been a child. All of us, we have been childs, or we are childs now, and curiosity and the need to search for some questions and to see how the things work, or we think that things work. Our need to explain our worlds and where we are and the people with we deal this world, then the curiosity, I think, is a more important power or factor that can explain what we do.
Yeah, as it probably has a big influence on like one's motivation, right? If you're not curious enough to research a certain topic, then your motivation to actually do so will probably also not be that high.
Yeah. And yeah, also the curiosity to deal with unknown. And I mean, to deal with other people's world, with other cultures, with other views of the world.
Yeah.
This diversity is fantastic. And if we have the opportunity to get a glimpse of the diversity of our societies and our landscapes and our tastes landscapes, colors landscapes, that gives us a wonderful opportunity to interact with the diverse world. Yeah.
Yes. So it definitely takes like a sincere interest to get to know other cultures, other people as well, in order to really work with this for like 31 years already right now. So that's really nice. And then I was wondering, from all of the studies that you've done so far, or that you have played a part in so far, was there one specific study or theme or topic that really stood out to you, that appeals to you most?
That's a very difficult question to answer.
I can imagine.
Because to some extent, I loved all of them in all the same level of value or pleasure doing this. Yeah. I was in St. Petersburg in 2019.
Okay.
And I was working with colleagues there from the St. Petersburg University, Alexandra and Irina.
Yes.
And together with them and colleagues from our department, Frank van Meurs and Brigitte Planken, we started a project to investigate the effect of language choice in Russia. And we did an experiment. We are now analyzing the data. And what was most important for me was that thanks to the investigation and sharing the experiment with them, let me give me the opportunity to learn about the Russian society. And I talk a lot with the students there. And I mean, doing research is not only implement experiments and writing papers after doing analysis, but also there is a human side that allows you to contact with other people.
Yes.
Something like this occurs in 2017 in Santiago de Chile with colleagues from the Universidad Católica there. So, or in Boston. The human side of doing research, I think, is maybe the most interesting of all.
Yeah. So apart from whatever exact study it is that you are conducting, the connection that you're making with the other people working on it is the most important, or what drives you the most.
And in our field of studies, we are also investigating how people perceive communication.
Mm-hmm.
And how communication can change, or at least try to change, some kind of behaviors. So we are studying the effects of words and word choice, language choice. So it is a very astonishing power that what we say, this energy that we use to produce waves in the air, and these waves go to the ear of the receiver,
mm-hmm.
that this kind of physical energy is transformed in other kind of energies, such acts, movements, and all kind of human activities. So studying the language use in real concrete situation gives us a glimpse in how we interact with each other and with our environment, with our world.
Yes. Yeah, that's very interesting. I really like it. And is there still something that you would really like to discover in the future in this field of research, or like a certain topic that you really hope that you can still do research on one day? Or maybe you already have some plans laying for the future?
We are now working on three papers at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
One dedicated to the Russian experiment. And we have also one dedicated to the use of English in Turkey. This is a corpus analysis on the use of English in Mostobor in Turkey. And, there are some ideas in which the relation between words and visuals, how do they work and how do they interact in an advertisement? This is maybe one of the projects that we will work in the next years. Yeah.
Okay, nice. So it really takes a long period of time, which makes sense, of course, to really study one topic. You say like the next period of years, it'll really take a while.
Yeah, some works is not easy to give an answer in 1 year. You need more time to do research, to get all the facets or the sides of this research. You need time.
Yeah, to be able to get the complete picture.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. All right. Well, then I'd like to end on a more informal note, actually. I'd like to ask you, what is your favorite thing to do in your spare time? Because we know teachers from like a more formal situation, obviously. But I guess it's nice for us students to know what is it that you like to do most in your free time.
Well, in my free time, I love a lot to read novels. I am now reading a novel of Javier Marías, Thomas Nevison. This is a Spanish author, and I enjoy it. I am now in page 58. But I love also to read poems. For example, Cavafis, a very sharp writer, poet. I can read you a couple of lines from his poem Ithaca, because I think it's a good example for all of you. You should write for your bachelor thesis and for your master thesis an abstract of your article or paper. Yes. And the poem Ithaca from Constantino Cavafis is a perfect example in doing an abstract. He makes an abstract of Homer's Odyssey. And this is a very powerful poem, and starts with the first words saying, "As you set out for Ithaca, hope your road is a long one, full of adventure, full of discovery. Laestrygonians, Cyclops, angry Poseidon, don't be afraid of them. You'll never find things like that on your way as long as you keep your thoughts raised high, as long as a rare excitement steers your spirit and your body. Hope your road is a long one. Might there be many summer mornings when, with what pleasure, what joy, you enter harbors you are seeing for the first time. May you stop at Phoenician trading stations to buy fine things, etc., etc., etc." So this poem is an island of pleasure to excite our minds and to give insights in our own life. So I like to read poems, but also to hike in the countryside in Nijmegen and also Italy or Spain. And I bike a lot with my friend and colleague, Hubert Cursilius. We do a lot of bike routes, travels in the surroundings of Nijmegen.
Nice. Yeah, it's beautiful here. So that's really nice.
And listening to music, to singer-songwriters as Gert Vlognel from South Africa. This is also an interesting musician that I will highly recommend. And also, well, the problem with COVID is that we do not have the possibility to go to a museum and to go to the cinema.
Yeah, but, unfortunately.
These two activities were one of my favorite activities, together with my wife and friends and family, to share time in the cinema. And afterwards, taking a beer and talking about what we have seen.
Yeah, unfortunately, let's hope we can do that again in a couple of months, or at least not a lot more than that.
Yeah, I hope so. But we should be patient and keep on going with this situation and try to improve it as we are doing now.
Exactly. We'll just stay hopeful, stay reading books, going out for nice walks in the surroundings of Nijmegen, listen to some music, and then just stay positive and we should be fine.
Thank you very much, Mom, by giving me the opportunity to share these things with you and with the students of our International Business Communication. And I wish you also a very nice day. And I see you again in another moment or situation.
Yes, thanks a lot for participating. And also, thanks for listening. We've hoped you enjoyed this podcast. And we hope you're listening to the next one as well. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.